16. Kiala Kakua. As you know perfectly well, Dr. Pereira, said Ambassador Bose in a tone of patient resignation, few of us share your knowledge of mathematical meteorology, so please take pity on our ignorance. With pleasure, answered the exobiologist, quite unabashed. I can explain it best by telling you what is going to happen inside Rama very soon. The temperature is now about to rise as the solar heat pulse reaches the interior. According to the latest information I've received, it is already above freezing point. The cylindrical sea will soon start to thaw, and unlike bodies of water on Earth, it will melt from the bottom upward. That may produce some odd effects, but I'm much more concerned with the atmosphere. As it is heated, the air inside Rama will expand and will attempt to rise toward the central axis. And this is the problem. At ground level, although it is apparently stationary, it is actually sharing the spin of Rama, over 800 kilometers an hour. As it rises toward the axis, it will try to retain that speed. And it won't be able to do so, of course. The result will be violent winds and turbulence. I estimate velocities of between 200 and 300 kilometers an hour. Incidentally, very much the same thing occurs on Earth. The heated air at the equator, which shares the Earth's 1600 kilometer an hour spin, runs into the same problem when it rises and flows north and south.
Ah, the trade winds. I remember that from my geography lessons.
Exactly, Sir Robert. Rama will have trade winds with a vengeance. I believe they'll last only a few hours, and then some kind of equilibrium will be restored. Meanwhile, I should advise Commander Norton to evacuate as soon as possible. Here is the message I propose sending.
With a little imagination, Norton told himself, he could pretend that this was an improvised night camp at the foot of some mountain in a remote region of Asia or America. The clutter of sleeping pads, collapsible chairs and tables, portable power plant, lighting equipment, electrosan toilets, and miscellaneous scientific apparatus would not have looked out of place on Earth, especially because there were men and women working here without life support systems. Establishing Camp Alpha had been hard work, for everything had had to be manhandled through the chain of airlocks, sledded down the slope from the hub, and then retrieved and unpacked. Sometimes, when the braking parachutes failed, a consignment had ended up a good kilometer away, out on the plain. Despite this, several crew members had asked permission to make the ride. Norton had firmly forbidden it. In an emergency, however, he might be prepared to reconsider the ban. Almost all this equipment would stay here, for the labor of carrying it back was unthinkable, in fact, impossible. There were times when Norton felt an irrational shame to be leaving so much human litter in this strangely immaculate place. When they finally departed, he was prepared to sacrifice some of their precious time to leave everything in good order. Improbable though it was, perhaps millions of years hence, when Rama shot through some other star system, it might have visitors again. He would like to give them a good impression of Earth. Meanwhile, he had a rather more immediate problem. During the last 24 hours, he had received almost identical messages from Mars and Earth. It seemed an odd coincidence. Perhaps they had been commiserating with each other, as wives who lived safely on different planets were liable to do under sufficient provocation. Rather pointedly, they had reminded him that, even though he was now a great hero, he still had family responsibilities. The commander picked up a collapsible chair and walked out of the pool of light into the darkness surrounding the camp. It was the only way he could get any privacy, and he could also think better away from the turmoil. Deliberately turning his back on the organized confusion behind him, he began to speak into the recorder slung around his neck. Original full personal file, dupes to Mars and Earth. Hello, darling. Yes, I know I've been a lousy correspondent, but I haven't been aboard ship for a week. Apart from a skeleton crew, we're all camping inside Rama, at the foot of the stairway we've christened Alpha. I have three parties out now, scouting the plane, but we've made disappointingly slow progress, because everything has to be done on foot. If only we had some means of transportation. I'd be very happy to settle for a few electric bicycles. They'd be perfect for the job. You've met my medical officer, Surgeon Commander Ernst. He paused uncertainly. Laura had met one of his wives. But which? Better cut that out. Erasing the sentence, he began again. My M.O., Surgeon Commander Ernst, led the first group to reach the cylindrical sea, 15 kilometers from here. She found that it was frozen water, as we'd expected, but you wouldn't want to drink it. Dr. Ernst says it's a dilute organic soup, containing traces of almost any carbon compound you care to name, as well as phosphates and nitrates and dozens of metallic salts. There's not the slightest sign of life, not even any dead microorganisms. So we still know nothing about the biochemistry of the Ramans, though it was probably not wildly different from ours. Something brushed lightly against his hair. He had been too busy to get it cut, and would have to do something about that before he next put on a space helmet. You've seen the vidies of Paris and the other towns we've explored on this side of the sea. London, Rome, Moscow. It's impossible to believe that they were ever built for anything to live in. Paris looks like a giant storage depot. London is a collection of cylinders linked together by pipes, connected to what are obviously pumping stations. Everything is sealed up, and there's no way to find out what's inside without explosives or lasers. We won't try these until there are no alternatives.